commission on May 30th with Ed Caldwell at 107 Caldwell Street.
I guess I was saying that I felt extremely good with the support that I got, which said that the majority of people at Tennis Club see me as Ed, as opposed to Ed, we have to be Afro American. That's the way I feel. As I've said, that club has been very good for me. Been the best $300 I ever spent in my life. I have very good friends there. It's just been a great place for me. People that I know and whatever. The last year just took a lot out of me. Okay. I'm pretty much a strong person, but I had just lost both my mother and father. I had not dealt with my grief. I had my aunt across the street that lost her daughter, and she depends on me, and I got an aunt in Durham with my father's sister. When he died, she just transferred everything that she had felt about him to me. So I had a lot on me at that time, and everybody was coming to want the peace. My son's business was failing, his marriage was failing, and trying to be support to him. I didn't need this kind of stress, really didn't. So it took a lot out of me. I think it was good that I had friends. I think I called you and talked with you. That was very good for me. You thought that you should have done a lot more. Just the fact that I was able to talk to you meant a lot to me. Because we'd always talked throughout the years. And I always consider you one of my best friends. Okay. You know, just being there. Your family, Bryna, children, they were all very respectful, whatever. And they knew that we had a great relationship. And they respect me, you know, wherever I see them and so forth. So it was very important that, you know, you came out and talked to me. I know you felt that you should have done more. I don't think there was anything you could do. Okay. Just be there for me. You read the thing by Boyce and others that was gratifying, you know. But I was just sort of beat down. I had gone to a grievance counseling workshop or whatever that helped me a lot deal with death of my family, that sort of thing. I had done an interview with a person by the name of Erica Roth, who made a death and dying tape to be given to the staff and other at the medical school and hospital and whatever, and I found that to be very gratifying. So I've dealt with the fact of my parents passing, but I'm still kind of beat down to a certain extent. I got more on me really than I can well deal with at this particular point. Let me tell you this, being an only child, I had two super parents that I kind of relied on. I went to my father for one set of things. And we talked. If I had problems, we could talk. You know, he never gave me advice, but he let me talk through it. My mother was very supportive and has always been there for me throughout life. So she gave me a good foundation, you know, and I've just sort of been able to take her strength and, you know, and be strong. You know, my father taught me to be strong. My mother encouraged me to be strong. Losing them was a difficult feeling. When things get rough, you could always go and talk to them. They were there. I always depended on them, you know, if I needed them. When they passed, I moved up. And I was not the sandwich generation anymore. And my children now depend on me. The family depends on me. And even though my aunt really should be the one that is looked to in family, they now look to me. And I've questioned them, why are they looking to me? I'm younger than some of the other members, certainly of my aunt. I have cousins and so forth that I'm younger than, but they have bestowed this on me. So when things go wrong, they call me. Yeah, as I was saying that, that the family has moved me up to be the head of the family. And they must have done this because I'm male. I'm the only living male in my age group. I think also is a fact, man, that I'm a community leader. A lot of respect. That's the only thing that I can say. It's a difficult feeling being now the only one, you know, that your children have to depend on and other people in the family depend on. A lot of responsibility. So we can end it there if you want to. Okay, well, go ahead.
Why don't we continue tomorrow and talk more about your role in the community with the church.
Okay.
And then how you perceive society as changing over the last 20 years, if you perceive it as changing.
I think it is.
And then anything else that you want to talk about that you haven't mentioned so far. So we'll do those three things tomorrow.
Okay.
This is Bob Gilgore interviewing Edward Caldwell at 107 Caldwell Street on May 31st, year 2000. Morning, Ed.
Morning.
Wonder if you could tell me about how the church influenced your life and the church work you did.
Church of Reconciliation probably influenced my life. The greatest that I had a major impact on me. In 1966, or thereabout, the downtown church had grown to the extent that they wanted to colonize, start another Presbyterian church, and they donated or gave $100,000 to purchase land and sort of seed money to get the other started. They purchased a tract of land down on Elliott Road, very close to Franklin Street. And preparations were begun to colonize. The person at the Presbyterian Church was named Vance Barron. He was the minister. They had an assistant minister there named Bowie Sewell. And Bowie was supposed to go with the new church to become its minister. The church at the time, under Bowie and Pat Hobson, said that they wanted an integrated church, and they begun to look for black persons that would be some of the original. So Bob Phillips and Bowie came to visit me and asked me if I would consider becoming a part of the Church of Reconciliation.
Was the Presbyterian Church that you were a member of before?
No, I was a member of St. Paul AME Church. I wasn't going regular.
Was that a black church?
That's a black church. That's my home church. In fact, my family was some of the originators of that church. I talked it over with my mother and father, and they said they had no problems with, you know, if that's what I wanted to do, then that's fine. And so I told Bowie and Bob that I would help them start a church. I wasn't sure that I wanted to join the church, but then I would, you know, I would help them find people. I would be there to have input as to what an integrated church ought to be like.
So were you going to find black members for them?
Yeah. But also design the church so that blacks would feel comfortable being in the church. And they agreed. So I started meeting with them at the downtown church. They put a little pressure on me because they wanted me to join the church and downtown church and go with the other members, you know, to the new church. I resisted. I did not want to be a part of the downtown church.
The downtown church, the Presbyterian church, being an all-white church?
It's all white. For several reasons. One, I did not feel as comfortable. You know, people came up to me and shook my hand and whatever, but I didn't get a feeling that they really wanted me in the church. I just didn't feel that comfortable. Second reason, Bob, is the history of the Presbyterian Church. To back up a little bit, there was a minister at that church named Charles. He founded the community church. Charlie Jones. Maren Anderson came to the University of North Carolina to sing, have a concert, and Charlie Jones invited her to his home and to have dinner and whatever. The church fathers and so forth didn't think that was appropriate in those days because whites should not be entertaining, you know, blacks in their home, much less their minister. So it pretty much tore the church up, split the church. Charles Jones, I'm not sure whether they asked him to leave or whether he decided to leave, but he left and took a sizable number of members and they formed the community church down on Purefoy Road. Charlie Jones, man, was just a person really out there that not only did he preach brotherhood, but he lived brotherhood. Really have to know Charlie Jones to just see what a super person he was. We all knew that, and so I just had a feeling that number one, they did Charlie Jones wrong, and the fact that you know, they had that history of being very conservative. Did not want to be a part of that church, so I didn't join that church. But when the church split off, I did go with them as one of the original persons. And I joined out there.
At the Church of Reconciliation?
Yes. I really believe in what they were doing. Bowie Sewell was just sort of a super person. Bob Phillips, Pat Hobson, all these were quality people. And I found some others, you know, to come and worship with us. Under no pressure did I say that we'd like for you to join, but to come and just see what we were doing. The church, I had been in and out of a lot of churches and really never found anything that I felt met my needs. I think that the Church of Reconciliation, because it was willing to experiment with different forms of worship, the fact that they wanted to have an integrated church, you know, I believed in it. So I worked very hard in that church. They really accepted me. I felt very comfortable there. There were some other blacks that went and did not feel as comfortable. I guess from just talking to them, they just didn't feel that they meant everything that they were saying, okay? In that church, I found that I was considered a real leader. You know, I had a lot of say-so in helping design the church and its and what it was doing. To give you some examples, we started a neighborhood house. And the neighborhood house, we bought a house. We took some of that money that the church gave us and bought a house that was on Church Street and the corner of Carr and Church. Okay. Neighborhood house, well, it bordered the black and white neighborhoods. And I push real hard to say, if you want blacks to join your church, then you gotta have a ministry in their communities. And the thing was to bring both black and white together so that white would have an opportunity to work in that neighborhood house, do different things, make friends with the neighborhood, and begin to understand what it was like being in the black community and not really looking down, but just the interaction was very positive. That neighborhood house was one of the best things I think could have ever happened. And both parents and kids still talk about that house.
What went on in the house?
We had study groups. We provided tutorial programs. We had sewing, driver's ed, anything that the community felt it had a need for, then we tried, you know, to provide it there. Whites got more out of it than blacks, really. Just the contact, just friendships, and talking about kids, you know, over things that they were doing. So it was a real success, okay? We found it very difficult to keep that house going because you almost need paid staff. And we went to Duke University and got an intern in the religion program. And he and his wife stayed there, okay, and ran the programs very successfully. Okay, that was part of his internship and so forth. That went very well until he graduated, and you know, then the program started to fall apart. Everybody was very busy at that time. And nobody really had time really to devote just to make sure that the thing ran very well. We had a lot of criticism from the downtown church because they thought that we had squandered their monies, okay? They said they gave us that money to build a church, not to start experimental programs and so forth. But we didn't listen to them, you know. We figured they gave it to us, it was our money, okay? We continue to meet, very influential, along with some others, to donate part of that property that we had been given, we purchased to, we gave it to Inchico, you know, Interfaith Council. We built some housing, you know. Oh, that was the second thing. The church just thought we were just very poor. You know, business people or whatever you want to call us. Because here we were doing all these social programs and for the poor and the needy, you know, and that wasn't what they gave us that money for. So, you know, we pulled on the carpet and that sort of thing. But, you know, we were wild, idealistic, and we just did what we wanted to. Had a lot of big hand in doing that, giving that property. And what we said and how we justified it was, if we gave Interfaith Council this land so that they could build housing, and we could provide a ministry to the people in those housing units. We would continue to meet in Phillips Junior High School, which is middle school now. I really enjoyed meeting in there. As we met in the cafeteria, you could look out, and you could see the greenery, whatever, and it was just sort of magnificent. We experimented with a lot of different forms of worship. Some was too far out for some of the members, and they left. We had dance, different forms of dance as an expression of your religion. We had organ and a guitar. The young people played the guitar. Bo Phillips, Bob Phillips' son, was the one that learned to play the guitar and played with Lynn Eikenberry. Lynn was our organist, you know. Just fantastic. I just really got caught up in being a member of that church. We went on retreats. We had nurturing groups where we took books and we read books, and we met in each other's homes with potluck dinners, and we discussed the books and just fellowshipped. Really got to know a lot of people, man. Not only did we discuss books, but we discussed growing up in the South. And I spent a lot of time really articulating how I felt about growing up under segregation. More of a training for them, you know, whatever. I was officer, I was leader, okay? Pretty much, they listened to me. You know, I told them I was having a difficult time. I was one of the only ones. We had a few other families that came and decided to stay. Sandra and Willie Bird, Jim Morrell, you know, and so forth. But we had a lot of people to drop out, like Wade DeGraff, when he came for a while. Vivian Fashi, you know. But they were not willing to hang in there. If someone said something which was insensitive, then they were looking for an excuse to say, I knew it, you know, I'm getting out of this. They insensitive. My thing was, you gotta let people make mistakes. You know, and you point out, you don't jump on them, you know, because we're all in this together. And I just found it to be very, very positive. I went back to the church Sunday just to go, you know, and I just got very emotional. Even though the format's different, they've gotten away from reconciliation and that sort of thing and gone on to other things. But while I was there, they tried extremely hard to make reconciliation.
Are they still integrated?
Yeah, they're still integrated.
And it's significant?
No, it's never going to be significant. Okay. I would imagine because blacks have a different form of worship and expression and whatever. For an example, we had some real trained musicians in the church, beautiful voices and that sort of thing, and they were singing songs, you know, that I told them, now I want to hear some spirituals, you know, bring a little gospel in here, you know. I also told them that we were never going to be significant. The next thing we had to recruit a black minister, okay, and they agreed. So I was on a search committee going around looking to see if we could encourage a black minister to come to Chapel Hill. Some came and looked us over to see if we were serious, okay. And when we offered jobs, you know, I think they were just seeing if we were for real. Several people we offered jobs and they struggled with it. And said, no, I think I'd rather stay in a black church. We had a national search. I mean, we went everywhere. We went as far as Tennessee. We recruited a guy named Ezekiel Bell. Ezekiel Bell was just a fiery person. I had met him in my school board work. Plus, I got pushed into a black caucus of Presbyterian ministers. The blacks in the Presbyterian U.S. is very small because of it split off from the other Presbyterian church because the Civil War and segregation. So the so very few blacks in that church. And so the church put money up so that we could meet and see what kind of influence we'd have on the major church. So I was a leader. And we'd go to Atlanta, different places, and so forth. I met Ezekiel Bell in one of those meetings. And Ezekiel also didn't think that we were serious. Okay, we recruited up here, let him come up here and preach and whatever, and then showed him around, offered him the job, and he also turned it down. We had some interns, black, you know, to be come and preach. We said, well, maybe we won't be able to find one. Let's get one out of Duke and groom him, let him come while he's studying and see if he'll, I can't remember one person was there. He finally went somewhere else. We went to University of Chicago and got Maron Phillips. You know, we taught Maron to come. Maron was the first black minister of the church. People accepted Maron very well. Maron, I don't know if you know Maron Phillips. Maron's a very, very dynamic person. Poetry, he's just a great speaker, okay? He's with me now at St. Paul, because Maron gave up the church because even though he felt comfortable just trying to be everything to everybody in that was too much strain on him. In other words, he was trying to preach what he thought different people wanted to hear. And I told him, man, let's preach some black sermons, you know. Let's have some black music. At least one sermon need to be geared to the way we do things in the, you know, traditional black church. And when he did, people really enjoyed it. You know, just a dynamic speaker. He told stories, you know, the old, whatever you call it, speak and response thing, and just showman. And that's what black preachers are. They're more showman than they are anything else. Mainly because people couldn't read, and so therefore you know, it was almost like being on stage and stuff, you know. I think Myron enjoyed it, but Myron, at some point, it started to, he needed to get out. At that time, I was having pressure put on me by, not my parents, but other relatives. My grandmother's best friend, who was also kinfolks, thought that I'm giving all this services and so forth to the church, man. I need to come home and do that there.
In their church.
In their church. And I couldn't argue with that. I learned a lot in that church. Budgeted, just the way that they do things. The Presbyterians have a form of government that you just can't knock. I mean, they just do things very businesslike, and they just do things well. And so I learned a lot, and I carried it back to the to St. Paul. Let me talk a little bit about the church, because I was in that church. There were ministers, well, the church organization is Orange Presbyteria had several churches within it. And so Church of Reconciliation was part of Orange Presbyteria, made up of about five or six counties, from Burlington to Chapel Hill and so forth. They recognized that I was a leader. So they sort of use my talents, you know, to have a lot of say-so in the overall Orange Presbyterian. I mean, I was a leader there too, you know, because they were trying to get other churches to integrate and work in communities and that sort of thing, and not just be a white church on Sunday at 11 o'clock. As a result, I used to get invited out to just go talk to Presbyterian churches throughout, not only Orange Presbyterian, but all over North Carolina, up in the mountains. I mean, places, man, that I was a little afraid to go talk, you know, but I did. And just tell them what we had done and that sort of thing. Very well received. I also got appointed to go to the Presbyterian Convention, you know. And just to back that up a little bit and explain that, you had to be a very religious, well thought of person in the Presbyterian Church to go to the convention. They just don't send everybody. I got to go as a very young man, okay? And I was in awe because I knew, I mean, that was an honor, you know, to be asked to go. They invited me in on many of the committee meetings and so forth, and I was a part of that overall major church. I think it was only, I saw maybe three other blacks at that convention. But it had an impact. Bowie Sewell you know, was introducing me around and made sure that everybody knew who I was and that sort of thing. I was in awe. I didn't say very much, you know, because I felt sort of out of place. They started to argue about Martin Luther King, you know, communists and whatever. I think they were saying something about whether or not they were going to, well, something came up about Martin Luther King, which to me just was uncalled for. I mean, they were arguing about things like evolution. Hey, man, evolution. I thought we settled that a long time ago, you know. Evolution versus creation. And I sit there and listen to that, and having a scientific background, I say, these ministers, man, you know, it just amazed me. I sit there and listen to that, and I'm losing my patience until they said something about Martin Luther King. And I raised my hand, and I marched to the podium. It must have been 300 or 400 people in that assembly. And I told them just what I thought, okay? You know, sitting here arguing about, you know, Martin Luther King, and, you know, I don't have no business in here. Y'all saying things, man, like I'm not even here. I can't believe that, you know, church people even believe like this. It was after I got to speak, okay, it was quiet. You know, I just turned the tables and they voted. Okay. I didn't know I was that powerful a speaker. You know, and people came up and said, best speech I ever heard in my life. To this day, I don't know what I said. You know, I just sort of laid it on the line, and I couldn't believe church people were sitting here, you know, doing this kind of thing. And if that's what you're doing, I don't need to be a part of this. Okay. I mean, you're talking about him as if I'm not here. The things that you're saying, you know, you said it's about him, you're saying it about me. So I began to understand that I could be very influential as an orator, you know, if I felt moved, if I felt emotion or whatever. So from then, I just sort of got propelled, you know, as a leader in the overall church. Met with other ministers, whatever. I worked on other committees that had to do with black causes and so forth. The Presbyterian Church had several universities and colleges that they supported. Dave's and them to be one. And that was a black one. I can't remember which one it was. But the amount of money that they were giving this black college was, you know. And I said, man, y'all giving Davidson all this money. You know, y'all not giving this other, you know, pittance. You know, y'all can do better than that. And so the givings to the black college got increased. And, you know, the black president came up to me and he thanked me and that sort of thing. And he considered me a real leader because I could influence, okay? And while I was there, you know, I made sure that black colleges and black churches and whatever got at least a fair amount of money of the budget and so forth. I was approached because we were having difficulty trying to find a black minister to be the minister of the Church of Reconciliation. They asked me to go to seminary, okay, and become a minister. They were willing to wait the 2 years or so for me to go to Richmond Seminary. It's not Richmond, but it's in Richmond, to become a minister, you know. I really weighed that thing, man, you know. I didn't want to be away from Chapel Hill that long because my school board work, and being a leader in the community. I didn't want to be away from family that long, so I weighed that thing. The other thing I weighed is, am I really cut out to be a minister? Okay, if I'm gonna be a minister, it means I gotta live, you know. And I'm not quite ready to live, you know, what's called to be, you know, because you need to set the examples and that sort of thing. So I turned that down, but I really weighed that, you know.
It's quite an honor.
Quite an honor. I mean, they had already enrolled me. And it's the people from the seminary that used to come south and go to Orange Presbyterian and, you know, be a part of that and had a chance to see me and work with me and that sort of thing. So in the church, I was not only just a local leader, but I was a regional, which was Orange Presbyterian, the North Carolina Senate, you know, I sit on that, which is the state, and in the national church. Met a lot of good people, you know, and when I decided to go back, you know, I really had a lot of mixed feelings about going back to the church. St. Paul, because I found a niche there. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Let me also just say, I probably grew more being in the church reconciliation than I probably grew in my life. they were very patient with me. I had a lot of hostility and anger from having grown up under segregation. Poor schools, being treated like a second-class citizen. I just think that they hampered my development, and I'm very angry about that, okay? Still having problems in the job, being accepted. So I'm very, very angry. And it began to be expressed because the civil rights movement was going full bloom, and therefore blacks felt comfortable in speaking out. And I was speaking, you know. I was expressing my anger, and they let me express my anger, you know. And they loved me anyway, okay. That was probably more therapy for me as well as them, you know. I mean, I lash out at them for things, and they weren't the people, man, that I should be lashing out at, but I got it out of my system, you know. And so therefore I could be more humane. It doesn't bother me, you know, when somebody says something, you know, that I think is insensitive. I got all that out just being in church reconciliation. Developed some long life friends, you know, always be friends. Pat Hobson, Pat and Pete Hobson. Pat's a member of the club, used to play, but he's developed health problems. I consider family, okay? He just lost his wife, man, but I feel very comfortable going in and out of the house. I feel very comfortable coming in and out of my house. I worked with Pat out at Chemstrand. He was the director. He treated me with respect. It was not that difference when he saw me there. I was a friend. Very close to his children. Okay. I just feel like part of the family. And there were other people like Bob Phillips. Bob, Lynn Eichenberg, Kobe Savage,
I was very close to Lynn and his children. Bob Phillips and all his family, even when he split up with his wife, Fran, you know, remained friends with Boy Sewell and his family. He broke up with his wife and whatever. Boy was going through a hard time. Church began a hard time, you know, and I mean, I was a leader, you know, and I was saying, hey, he's a man. People have difficulties. I accept Boy, you know, he's a minister of the church, you know, if he's, he and his wife can't make it, then, you know, we can't get into their personal lives. And I could play that kind of part. When Boy left, they treated Boy almost like he was a god, being first minister. It was sort of hero worship, you know, and I said, Boy, I love you like a brother, but you're not Church of Reconciliation, okay? I told them, Boy wants to leave, Boy leaves. He's not the church. The church is bigger than any one person, okay? And, you know, I just lit into him and had that kind of influence. And Boy went his way.